Back on the air on WRKO. So I want to apologize to people on the live stream because we don't have audio right now. But we'll try to get it up in a second. But in the meantime, you can listen on www.wrko.com or you can listen along on the air, AM 680, believe it or not. That's how radio is normally consumed. People who spend some time, I mean, we've gotten away from that, but that's generally where we go. So, we're back. We're in the studio. We're talking about all sorts of exciting things that happened. But the most important thing is that we're back right now. So since we're back, I want to talk a little bit about the show, a little bit about what's going on, and a little bit about the hosts. So first of all, I'm going to start off and introduce myself. My name is Dan Fishman. I am the host of the show. I am active in Massachusetts politics. I'm currently running for auditor. And I've run for a few other positions. I worked on the Johnson Weld campaign. And I wanted to have a radio show where we talked about liberty issues because tribalism in our country has sort of broken us apart. You know, right and left, we are looking at issues which are not... right can no longer agree with left. Left can no longer agree with right. And anybody who doesn't fall into the left or right category is attacked by both sides. So I wanted to have a radio show where we said, you know, there's some things that aren't right issues or left issues. There are issues that are more important to look at from an independent viewpoint. So that's how I came here. I'm a computer scientist by trade. I'm not normally a radio show host, but that's it. So I want to introduce one of my co-hosts, Matt McLaughlin.
Good evening, everybody.
So, Matt, what can you tell us about yourself? How did you end up on this radio show?
I ended up on the show because I'm a friend of Dan's and have known him for quite some time. And Dan needed a sidekick. And I am generally a sidekick for hire. So I was more than happy to join the conversation. It's something that's interested me. I'm not as active as Dan in these things. In politics and stuff, but it's always interesting to talk to Dan. Also here to try to keep him on the straight and narrow and try to keep him honest.
Right. Well, we've had so many interesting conversations over the time that I thought you would be a good person to have in. But also, you know, let's point out that you're not just like amateurishly funny. You're professionally funny.
Some people have actually paid me for stuff. I don't do stand up or anything, but yes, I'm a performer, an actor.
Yep. Exactly. So that adds a lot. And I'll briefly throw over to our producer, John Gabso,
who's... Hey, my name is John, John Gabso. I'm a rideshare driver, and that's basically the meat of my libertarianism. If libertarians were in power, they won't regulate my job away. So thus, I'm a libertarian.
That's awesome. And so I think one of the important things, too, is none of us are professional media people. John works around different places. I write software. Matt has a regular Joe job as well as doing his commercials, acting gigs, stuff like that. But we're all united with this idea that fundamentally our country is based on the idea that you ought to be able to do whatever you want to do as long as you're not hurting anybody else. It's a simple thing, but we have two fundamental ideas. One, the idea of liberty essentially is based on two things. One, you own yourself. Okay, that seems like a really sort of trite thing to say, but if you think about it, it means that you get to control what goes into your body. And I'm reminded, Matt, of a movie that you made called Fat Cops.
Oh, Fat Cops, yes.
Yes, where the premise was...
The premise was after the Obamacare had been passed a few years later that being fat had been outlawed. So there were cops running around... arresting people who were eating contraband, like, fast food and stuff like that.
Yeah. Fat Cops is on YouTube. I recommend everybody check it out.
Although, if you Google Fat Cops, you may not actually... I mean, there's lots of other funny videos you'll probably run into, to be honest.
Right.
But, yeah.
So, all that being said, there is a... that idea that you own your body... is fundamental, that you actually do get to control what you get to put in your body, right? Smoking's not illegal, even though everybody knows it's bad for you. eating fat foods.
But smoking pot is becoming more legal.
Smoking pot is becoming more legal.
Maybe. Well,
for the same basic idea that...
Free the weed, legalize 420.
Exactly. That's where we are right now. And that recognizing all these issues of when you want to do something to your own body, you know, and you know, I don't think I'm saying anything that I'm not calling out, but John has some interesting piercings.
A nose ring.
That was, yeah, okay, yeah, that's a, that was a weird phrasing for a second there, Dan.
Well, no, but, you know, that again, those are things that are not illegal, right? You could do whatever you want to your own body.
Sure, I saw this guy, well, I saw the article, I didn't see the show he was on, but apparently this guy has had 10, 20 something plastic surgeries to look like a Ken doll, so much so that he's actually had ribs removed. Which I believe he actually carried on stage, according to the article. This man looks, I mean, he is apparently very happy with the way he looks. I think he looks like someone who's had way too much plastic surgery, and he's only like 20-something, so it's a little scary. I'm not saying there should be a law to prevent that man from doing that, but...
Well, you must have seen the person who did surgery to look like Barbie.
Yeah, I don't know if they're ever going to get together and live in a dream house. Also, this man looks nothing like Ken, partly because his arm's bent.
Right. And he has genitalia.
I, you know, it was on the network, so we didn't get that. I didn't see that far. So,
so all that being said, the number one, we believe you own yourself. Number two, we believe that you should never use force to take something away from somebody else. You can't say, you know what, I really like that car, I'm going to take it now. Or I'm going to, you know what, your money that you earned at your job, I'm going to take 10% of it so that I can do something else with it. And it doesn't matter what I want to do with it. No matter how worthy the cause, I should not be able to take your money to I shouldn't be able to take your money to spend on other causes. The whole point of a charity is not that charity is forced. Charity is given freely. If you're forced to contribute to something,
it's
not charity. Exactly right.
It's a tax.
Yeah, exactly.
Or theft.
And that's something that we really want to focus on. And that's what the point of our show is. And so I think one of the examples that I would like to talk about is something that happened relatively recently in my town. I live in Beverly, Massachusetts. Beverly is talking about passing a ban on single-use plastic bags, which is...
Is that a flat-out ban?
Flat-out ban.
Because I know in Boston, I think Cambridge does this already, but Boston is looking into charging you a dime for a plastic bag.
Paper, actually. Cambridge, it's paper only, no plastic.
Oh yeah, I thought Cambridge they would charge you a nickel or a dime, and maybe it's changed.
It's a dime for a paper bag, but they don't have plastic anywhere. Right. It's weird.
Oh wow. So I think Boston is trying to do something similar. I think there will still be plastic bags available, but you have to pay a dime. But this is a flat out ban.
This is a flat out ban, and so, you know, like the way things get resolved now, local politics is on Facebook. And so we had a conversation, and my general feeling about it, you know, just based on the liberty thing, is that you shouldn't ban things. If you want people to not use plastic bags, you can ask them to not use plastic bags. But stores that use plastic bags, that have single-use plastic bags, have them because they're incredibly convenient, and the customers generally like them.
And many of them get recycled for... lots of other uses.
Yeah,
For instance, a lot of people just store a buttload of them in their pantry.
Right.
You know, for use for some other time. And people use them. I mean, but in reality, people use them all the time for things. And yes, they do litter up. They do get. I mean, they are the urban equivalent of a tumbleweed, it seems.
Yeah.
Blowing around.
Right, and they're hard to dispose and all that stuff. But so first, I mean, just a quick point. The plastic bag itself is pretty miraculous, right? I mean, it's so thin and so strong, waterproof.
Solid point.
Yeah, I mean, it's an amazing achievement.
But I wish that I sort of understand. I mean, I don't know much about this ban. I understand the basic logic of, like, it's bad for the environment. Right. But what about the fact that everything I throw away has to be in a plastic bag?
Yeah.
I mean, I guess I do pay for them, but everything I throw away is in a plastic bag.
Right.
Maybe those decompose a little differently. I don't know. But there is, I have seen a couple of, is at least one, maybe a couple of beer companies that have started creating their six-pack rings.
Yes.
Like
Dolphin Safe.
Well, yeah, the idea that, you know, fish get, you know, get caught in this, or wildlife can, you know, get
injured.
They're actually sort of apparently making it out of fish food. So this stuff will be disposable and be able to feed fish.
That's pretty awesome.
That's an amazing idea. So why not, I don't know if squirrels need food in the city, but, like, I mean, could we make, why can't someone come around and go,
a plastic bag that's actually edible?
So
that's a good point. But for me, my general objection is banning a plastic bag means that, you know, essentially you're making a law against it. As you make a law, and this is sort of be a recurring theme on our show, laws require law enforcement, which injects force into our society. So if you're going to make a law that it's illegal to sell plastic bags, or it's illegal to give away plastic bags, you're going to have law enforcement. You're going to have police officers come into stores and say, hey, you're giving away plastic bags. And what's the consequence of that? I mean, are you going to arrest people? Are you going to fine people? And in my thread on Facebook, where I argued about this with my neighbors in Beverly, people said, oh, you know, so what? So what if this is a little fine? You know, maybe it's not a big deal for most people, but fines add up. There are people who are going to jail, debtors' prisons, because they can't pay fines.
Do we really have debtors' prisons?
So the ACLU has really worked hard against that, but we do, unfortunately, in the South still, Southern Poverty Law Center, ACLU has talked about both of those things, where people get fines, and then because they can't pay fines, they add up to the point that they become criminal offenses, and then they go to jail. And it's actually sadly common. But when that happens, it's very, it's unfortunate. It's not something that, I mean, America's founded on the idea of no debtor's prison. So the fact that it's happening now should alarm all of us. And should recognize the fact that it's happening because we have too many laws with too many fines.
Dan, I'm going to one-up you on the plastic bag law. This is a proposal in California. State of California is apparently considering a bill that would punish waiters at sit-down restaurants with up to 6 months in jail.
Wow.
And a fine of up to $1,000. For what, you might ask?
For what?
Maybe stabbing the customer, because that might be something. Giving them the wrong side.
Yeah.
I mean, these are things, you know.
Incorrectly arranging the forks.
If they offer the customer a plastic straw.
Really?
Yeah, that is the proposal. That if you offer a customer a plastic straw in the state of California, they want to put you in jail for 6 months.
But so if the
and
customer,
fine you $1,000.
If the customer asked for a plastic
straw. I believe,
straw,
I mean, it's not a past law, so it's nothing is set in plastic yet. but that is the, and I don't know, I mean, to be fair,
I don't know how
serious that is. I don't know if they're just trying to raise awareness. Sometimes wacky laws like this are just to try to raise some sort of awareness and stuff.
What is the alternative straw?
There are paper straws.
I don't know. I guess there's also those metal ones.
They're
right?
paper. Well, I don't know about metal, but there were paper straws long before.
There's also lips on cups. You can do that.
Yes, that also works.
Yeah.
So, you know, we got a phone call. We got
an old friend.
Our old friend Skippy calling in from Scouthy. Skippy, are you excited we're back on the air?
I am. Dan and Matt and John, before I explain how I saved your show, can I make a comment about the plastic bag?
Please do.
What's going to happen if they ban all plastic bags? We have an ordinance in the city of Boston. People who walk their dogs and the dog takes a dump, they're not picking it up with paper bags. They're using plastic. What are they going to pick up the poop with?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, if we just ban pooping.
And as far as me saving the show, here's how it goes. I set a novena to the patron saint of broadcasters is Saint Clare of Assisi. She is
really
the patron saint, and sure enough, use it back on the air. So there it is.
Well, it worked. I appreciate it.
I is all ready to convert to Catholicism based just on that.
Well, Matt's
already a Catholic.
Yeah, Matt's already
proud
Catholic,
that Novena actually worked. So,
all right. Well, Matt, there'll be an extra something, I hope, in the basket this week. Just
oh, yes. of course, Skippy.
St. Clair. All right. Yes.
Thanks so much for calling in, Skippy.
Libertarianism should grow and grow in Boston.
That's what we're going to try to do. Thanks for calling
guys,
in.
Good to hear from you. I'm listening. Bye-bye.
All right.
Oh.
Skippy's got me atoning for my myriad sins right now.
Yeah, there's a lot to atone for.
Well, somebody has to. All of those legal or illegal piercings.
So the other interesting thing about this, though, is that, okay, you know, the idea that we're going to ban plastic bags seems kind of ludicrous to us. But then the conversations that I had about this with people on Facebook, which I know you're not going to win any arguments on Facebook, but it was astonishing. People didn't seem to understand my basic point, which is you shouldn't force anybody to do something like this. And they're like, well, we're not forcing anybody to do it. I'm like, if you make a law...
That is the definition of force.
Exactly. Right. And if you make a law and you tell people that they have to do something, you are forcing
them. Well, I guess you do have a choice, technically. You have the choice of non-compliance.
Non-compliance.
Getting whatever the penalty for breaking that law is.
Right, but that penalty eventually ends up in jail. Normally, it's a fine beforehand, and then if you don't pay your fines after
certain
amount of time.
So what is, I mean, I guess, so here's some other questions. I mean, from a liberty sort of standpoint, you don't want, you're pretty open about the idea that you don't want to force anyone to do anything. But,
right.
Like, there is sort of a rationale, right, to banning the plastic bags. There is
some
data to, you know, that it's just not great for the environment.
I personally take canvas bags with me to the grocery store. Because I don't want to use single-use plastic bags because I recognize that they're bad for the environment. You know, it took me a couple of years to get to that spot where I said, you know, they're right. It's worth it.
So, Dan, you're telling me you don't want – you would prefer maybe go so far as to say you don't want people to use these single-use plastic bags from grocery stores, convenience stores, but you want them to have a choice?
Yes. You could say that I'm pro-choice for plastic bags. I'm pro-choice. I'm pro-choice on everything. Essentially, because when it comes down to the situation of, you know, and what's funny about it is that, you know, there are other people who say that they would consider themselves tolerant, that they would say that they are pro-choice, but they're not pro-choice about this. Because, I mean, these people, they were upset and offended that I would dare to suggest that there shouldn't be a law for something as important as plastic bags. Plastic bags aren't that important.
True story. I once got smacked in the face by a very left-wing friend for arguing against the extra bottle deposit on juice and whatnot that was on the ballot a few years ago. She hit me because I argued against a bottle deposit. What?
Right. Well, what's funny about that is that that was actually – that was just a straight-up tax. The bottle bill was not – I mean, they said, oh, you know, it's a deposit, but – in reality, most people don't ever collect their deposits back. I mean, when's the last time, Matt, you turned a bottle in?
I actually, about a year ago, I'd had, it was probably after one of the St. Patty's Day parades. And Skippy, I hope you, if you're not on the route, come on over this year for the parade. I'm right on the route. So,
I'll be there too.
We'll have a couple of pints, say a couple of prayers. I actually had just a bunch of bottles and I took a couple of giant, you know, big trash bags, put them down, and I got like no money.
Right.
But generally every week I save, I clean every, like I drink a lot of soda and beer, probably too much soda and not enough beer. Maybe I have that reversed.
Yeah.
But every bottle, I rinse it out. I'll rinse it out, dry it out in the sink and throw it in and leave it out. And I mean, I don't personally recycle it.
Right.
But I leave all of the depositables and all the ones that can be. Well, on trash night, I'll leave it out. On the fence and by my apartment.
Yeah.
And there are people that
come by,
travel the city and they take it and hopefully they're making money.
Right.
Like, I don't necessarily think of myself as a do-gooder, but I think it is good that these, you know, I don't want to throw them out as long as someone is returning this and they're.
Right. It is. There is an interesting.
I'm very happy to donate that right. for to their cause.
It is interesting, though, that because of the bottle bill, when you put a cast incentive behind it, the bottles do get recycled. But now that we have recycling everywhere, should we still have the deposit on the bottles? Or is it really just sort of a tax? Because I don't know what the exact percentage is, but most bottles don't actually get returned for deposit. And we were looking at this when the bottle bill was running 3 years ago, 4 years ago, whatever. Instead, it just becomes a way for government to get a little more money. So
it's kind of like, similar to the idea of selling gift certificates that he hoped no one ever cashes in, right? I mean, restaurants and whatever love to give a gift certificate because
sure.
they get their money up front. And not that they're unhappy when you use it, but right. I'm sure to some extent, restaurants, I'm sure there's plenty of local restaurants that can tell you, like, you know, we get a 50% or 80%, whatever their, I don't know what the rate is.
Right.
But if only 80% of people use their $25 gift certificate, then they've got a bunch of money that they just got.
You're exactly right. And it's kind of,
Well, I guess that's also what they call sort of like, to get back to that bottle is, you know, it's a carrot and stick, right? They want to entice you to return
right.
the bottle and recycle because that's good.
Right.
But, you know, if we're not getting the compliance they want, we've got to raise the,
So that's an interesting thing in that. And certainly in Beverly, it's considered a finable offense to put recycling into your trash. And I think that's true in a lot of places in Massachusetts. However, get a big black trash bag, you put anything you want into it, and nobody will know. Nobody will be the wiser. At least I hope they're not opening them up to see, oh, look, you've got paper towels in here. Should have recycled them. The issue, though, the liberty issue, coming back to that, is when these conversations that I had with people, when I said, you know, I don't want to force anybody. Let's incent them. Instead of saying that we're going to require everybody to not use plastic bags, let's do something simple and say that every time you bring canvas bags to the grocery store and you don't use them, the cashier puts a little something on the receipt. You can turn those receipts in for a dollar off your property taxes. Give people an incentive to do it.
But isn't the incentive... Well, no, you're not charging in this case. Whereas right. in Boston, they want to charge you a dime. That's different than just flat out banning them.
In Cambridge, though, they don't even have the plastic bags at all. They charge you a dime for paper, and there's no plastic anywhere. Now, I mean, I don't know about you, Matt, but I'm certainly old enough that I remember when there were no plastic bags, and it was all paper in the store.
And the paper bags that didn't have handles on top.
Yeah.
No, you had to carry your groceries from the bottom.
Yeah, those handles are actually kind of bogus. I prefer to not use them anyway.
Shout out to Roach Brothers. The paper bags from Roach Brothers, those are great.
Really? Whole Foods does that as well. I'm always worried about that. I don't think those are quite strong enough.
They're probably actually, I mean, I'm guessing if they're not the same, they're very similar for Roach Brothers and Whole Foods. Yeah, I mean, I know I shop one there, they're great.
So fundamentally, the liberty point is this. People ought to be able to do whatever they want. We generally agree on that. But the thing that everybody ought to agree upon is that if you want to do something and you're not hurting anybody, nobody should be making a law about it. People shouldn't ban plastic bags in the same way that they shouldn't ban you doing something else. They shouldn't ban you suntanning, right? Suntanning is clearly bad for you, right? You get skin cancer, melanoma, all these things. We shouldn't ban suntanning. Eating fatty foods. Talk about the Fat Cops movie. We shouldn't ban that either. All of these things that government, people, and arguably with the best of intentions, I'm sure if you asked anybody who's behind this ban on plastic bags, they'd say, oh no, I'm not doing it for the power. I'm doing it because I want to save the environment. But they want to have the power to save the environment. And so, fundamentally, liberty is about that. Liberty is about resisting people acquiring power. Because we think that when it's an organic method, when we all come together willingly, voluntarily, that's when we can make lasting changes to the universe.
Believe what I saw. 100 billion bottles.
Liberty on the Air. We are back. We are talking various liberty issues, and most excitingly, we're back. WRKO AM 680, the voice of Boston. You know, we don't have to do the call signs because we're a paid show, but I like it. I mean, RKO has always been a legendary radio station for me. You know, from Howie Carr to, I mean, Kim and VB in the morning. You know, it's no point in us sucking up to them, but I'm glad that we're on RKO. It makes more sense than any other station. So I want to talk about a couple things. First of all, I want to talk about the fact I have the flu right now. It's miserable. This is the second time this winter that I've got the flu. So I apologize if my voice is a little off. And I didn't get the flu shot this year. Do you get the flu shot, Matt?
I have not gotten the flu shot this year.
Have you gotten the flu?
I don't think so.
All right. I normally get the flu shot, and I've always wondered about the difference. I didn't get it this year. I got sick twice, pretty sick. So I am committed to getting the flu in the future. Sort of ties into a
loop. Were you committed to getting the flu?
I'm committed to getting the flu shot. But it's interesting because there's a, you know, libertarians talk sometimes about vaccinations, and it's one of the complicated issues. But when I was talking beforehand about the idea that, you know, a core element of libertarianism, of liberty, is that you own yourself.
Yeah.
If you own yourself, nobody ought to be able to force you to get a vaccination. And people complain. They say, oh, you know, like, for example, and this is a legitimate complaint. There are kids who, you know, they have leukemia, whatever, they have a very troubling situation. And as a result, they can't get vaccinations. So having unvaccinated kids around, kids who actually can get various diseases, makes things worse for them. And it's clear that vaccines work. And people, like, we're seeing outbreaks of measles again that we hadn't seen in a long time. People forget how terrible measles is. You know, it actually can be...
It is sort of, I think, funny how we've sort of forgotten. You know, you hear about... I mean, when I was a kid, like, people had gotten the measles, but it wasn't, you know, it was bad, but it wasn't, like, I never thought of that. Or chicken pox was...
Right.
Was a deadly sort of thing, and you hear something about, you know, stories from, you know, the olden days and people getting German measles and wiping out a bunch of people. You're like, what?
Right.
What?
Right. But, we're seeing a little bit of that. We've seen small outbreaks of measles in places, anti-vaccination folks. So.
But here's a, like, I'm guessing one where places you're going is if it's your body,
right.
You get to choose what to do with it. So if you do not want a vaccination, you shouldn't have to get one.
Right. That's essentially where I'm going to go
with
it.
But there's also, I think there's, I'm guessing there's a couple of arguments people go at you with that. And I'll start with one that's sort of different. For the most part, for these vaccinations, we're not talking about, we're talking about children. People who don't,
yep,
I mean, from a legal standpoint, don't have the right to decide these things. So it's up to the parents. That may be a different side question for the liberty sort of contingent is what is a, you know, as a child, you don't have a choice in a lot of things to some extent. But so that's not it. But then the other, I suppose, point people bring up is the idea that some sort of common good. Like if you're going to live in a community, we can't have you come in here and.
That, I think, is the most compelling argument in that if everybody vaccinates, you really do come close to wiping out a disease, right? I mean, we hadn't seen measles or serious outbreaks of measles for a while, right? Polio, the polio vaccination, right? We essentially wiped out polio. It's sort of having a little bit of a comeback now, but...
There's a lot of reboots going around these days.
Yes. Well, and to be fair, you know, the polio vaccination was very controversial because it actually gave you polio. So it was very early on. They didn't know how strong to make it. And so kids who got the polio vaccination would become slightly paralyzed. I'm trying to remember who. There's a famous musician who walks with a limp now because he got the polio vaccine in the early days and it was too strong.
Wow.
All that being said, the basic liberty take, I would advise everybody to vaccinate all the time. You know, be a little bit smart. But vaccines don't cause autism. Vaccines are generally, I believe, in your best interest. You should vaccinate when you can,
so
but I would never
though,
force.
If you get vaccinated,
Yeah.
And I don't. So what if I get measles? You're not going to get it.
Well, that's not so. The vaccination is not necessarily 100% effective, but also when the number of people that get vaccinated prevents the disease. So if 97% of people are vaccinated, the disease doesn't have much chance of spreading. But if only 2% of people are vaccinated, the disease can spread like wildfire. So the more people that are vaccinated in a community.
So choice is bad.
Well, I mean, the problem, well, so, you know, I used to be a special education teacher. I had a student who, his parents, he had a 200-word vocabulary. They took him in to get his DPT shot. He had an allergic reaction. The vaccine did not cause him to be autistic. However, it certainly seemed that way to them. And so they chose not to vaccinate their daughter 3 years later. I understand that. I appreciate the fact that they should have that choice. Because, you know, if that's what it seems like, that's what it seems like. All right. Vaccinations. I've got the flu. Let's talk about some of the things in the news. Government shut down last week for 2 days. It was pretty disappointing.
I mean, life was at an utter standstill.
Right.
No
internet.
Could anyone do anything last weekend?
All the bank cards were demagnetized.
was clearly, that was a really crappy, it was a power play.
It was an incredible miscalculation by the Democrats. I mean, it's probably the stupidest political thing we've seen anyone do in a long time. You know, they decided that they were going to go to the mattresses.
A lot of competition for that, but...
No, it's true.
We'll roll with it.
They decided they were going to go to the mattresses over DACA, right? The Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals.
Yeah, if you remembered.
Yeah, I did remember, now that Ken's not here. And it's interesting because... I have mixed feelings about DACA anyway. My general feeling about immigration, about undocumented workers, undocumented people in the country, is that you can't put them ahead of people who are legally waiting in line. So right now, you know, there are 100,000 people, maybe a million people, who apply to immigrate, to become citizens of the United States, and they don't get in. So they have to apply again the next year.
I understand one of the sort of problems we have with our immigration, our legal immigration, which I believe needs to be reformed. I'm not saying not to let people into the country.
Right.
But I kind of believe that allowing so much illegal immigration and having these people sort of hide in the shadows, I think we're actually sort of creating creating a second class, and that's not helpful for anybody. You know, if they live in this country, and they should be a part of this country. If they're, you know, contributing to the economics of it, they should share in what they're helping to create. But I think there should be a legal way to do that.
Right.
And we do have these amnesties periodically. But I think one of the problems with our legal immigration is when this sort of chain migration. So, like, if you came in here,
yeah,
you could bring your wife and your kids and then your parents, and what happens is then those people get to do chain migration. So basically there is a large percentage of our legal immigration that is being taken up by this. So that's on the legal side, but
yeah, I mean, the phrase is certainly very popular right now in terms of,
you know, well, I mean, call it whatever you want to call it, that's how it works.
Right.
So if you come into this country, you can, you know, there's almost like it's, you can bring
right.
two friends, and those two friends can bring two friends, and so on and so on and so on. And I think it's great that you want to, you know, someone comes over and they want to bring their wife and their kids or their parents or whatever and help take care of them and stuff like that. I think that's great, but you can't have one person coming in and bringing in 500. When
500, I agree, would be too much. But I mean, certainly, full disclosure, my family's story, my grandmother came over with her 9 sisters and her mother. So it was 10 of them at once. Did they bring anybody else in afterwards? I don't think so. But it was a large family. It's always been.
I'm not saying
that
not
is
bring
the American story.
I'm not saying not bring families.
Right.
And obviously, that was how many years ago? 50, 100?
Right.
Like, I mean, it was sort of different times. If we are, I mean.
Right. Chain migration is. I understand the idea. If you're going to say, you know, when we let somebody in, if we keep allowing each person to bring in two people, pretty soon we're going to have an infinite number of people.
Someone else that's waiting in line now can't come in.
Right.
So I'm not trying to stop people from coming in. I also want to give other people a chance to come in.
Right. I agree with you that the idea that there should be a limit to how close a relative is for them to bring in. I mean, the idea that you can bring in your children or that you can bring in your parents, that makes a lot of sense to me.
Of course.
But the idea that you can bring in your uncles and your aunts and cousins and stuff like that, that doesn't make sense.
I don't think it's just that. I think it's when your uncle comes in, he gets to bring in his wife
their family,
their kids.
Right, exactly.
And then his wife brings in her cousin, who then gets to bring in, I think that's sort of, but that's sort of beside the point. Again, I mean, we're not saying not to bring in, but you're talking about DACA, which is, you know, the Democrats seem to have, they figured that the country was very much behind it, which they are, including most of the Republicans.
Right.
I think they realized that the more the immigration conversation went on, the worse they would look. That's my read of that, which is why they sort of backed down on it.
Interesting. So what's interesting about it, though, is exactly right. So the Democrats did back down. So in the end, you know, there were the two trending tags, Trump shutdown, Schumer shutdown. As we talked about last week, Americans love alliteration. So the Schumer shutdown made it seem like better.
Yeah, you would, Schumer shutdown just rolls off the tongue.
Exactly. It's one of those phrases. And so within 2 weeks, within
Trump
2 days.
Down. They should have done something like that, to just.
Trump, I don't know. Whatever it was, Schumer shutdown, the Democrats felt like they had to make a move. And so they did. So they ended up essentially caving. But the funny thing about it is, they haven't caved for that long because...
Yeah, it's not over yet, obviously.
Well, more than that, the government is only funded till February 8th. So there could be another shutdown in 2 weeks.
What?
2.5 weeks. Yeah, it's pretty crazy because there's no fail-safe to avoid a second government shutdown. And, you know, the Democrats still want DACA on the table.
People did their jobs.
Well, they've been trying to set up... this is essentially the trade, right? Trump wants the wall, and he's willing to give DACA 800,000 kids residency in return for the wall. The Democrats sort of want to do that, but they don't want to seem to be conceding anything since they said they were going to fight the wall all the way. So they're in a tough spot because they want to protect the Dreamers, right? 800,000 people, 800,000 kids who, you know, have gone on to become mostly good citizens, earning jobs, earning money, etc., through no fault of their own, they were brought here. I don't know. If I were the Democrats, I would let Trump build the wall because, I mean, the wall is just, it's a stupid idea because there are tunnels, there are other ways around. I don't think the wall is going to be particularly effective.
Yeah, the wall is sort of, I don't really know. There's obviously lots of ways to get in the country illegally, but I mean, I think there's lots of ways to get in the country legally and illegally. Most of the illegal immigration comes from our southern border.
Yep.
And I believe
Very
most
few
of those
Canadians coming.
I believe most of those people are not necessarily Mexican. I think there's a lot of, and I could, I mean, I maybe
you're right,
or maybe some of them. I shouldn't necessarily say a lot of them, but I know there's a lot that come up through.
Yeah, no, you're for sure. You know, Costa Rica, Guatemala, all the Central.
That
American
have to cross Mexico's southern border.
Yep,
which is massively protected.
Is it?
Oh yeah,
interesting.
Like guns and stuff like that. Like crossing that border is a nightmare. I understand.
Interesting. So that's actually the hard part.
Like they really defend their southern border.
Interesting.
And then they yell at us for defending ours.
That's fascinating. I didn't know that.
But, you know, and I think there's, I don't know, I mean, with the kids and stuff like that. I mean, we're going to have some form of an amnesty, which we seem to do.
Right. And we've done it before. And you know, you and I have a good friend, George, who became a citizen through amnesty, through the Reagan amnesty. And, you know, if Ronald Reagan could do it, it's probably not.
I think he could do it. I don't think it's necessarily out of the. You know, I think it's a. We've moved from, you know, there is immigration, illegal immigration. That, you know, it sort of bothers me, people, like, you know, when you talk about wanting to enforce the laws that we have on the books.
Right.
Well, and if you want to enforce those laws, those immigration laws, or reform immigration, that you're some sort of a monster.
Well,
that is, you know, that right. is that hates every living person. Like I
think that's the thing that everybody can agree upon, or at least everybody ought to be able to agree upon, is that we don't want to give amnesty if that's going to punish all the people who waited in line legally, right? All the people who were waiting to come over. And said, you know what, I'm not going to cut the line. I'm not going to sneak into the United States. I'm going to follow the rules. And if we suddenly decide that we're going to allow these, I think it's estimated 12 million undocumented workers, to make them all citizens, or at least give them work permits, we're punishing all the people who were trying to play by the rules. Now, all that being said, the United States needs an immigrant workforce. Because, for example, down on the Cape, immigrants, teenagers, young people come in and fill most of the jobs on the Cape. Americans aren't doing those jobs. I mean, it used to be like an old romantic vision that you could go to Cape Cod and work there in your 20s. And
that's when you could work for a summer and pay off college.
Exactly.
And it's also when you didn't have to have 800 different things and study to, you know, and have, you know, things on your applications and whatnot, and
right, exactly.
You know, I mean,
but now, right now, the economics of it is that, you know, if you're going to go work down on the Cape, let's say you're going to make, you know, $15 an hour, which, you know, if it's an 8-hour day, 40-hour week, that's $600 a week. That's it's money, but it in the United States, certainly, if you're staying on Cape Cod, it's not particularly livable. Whereas if you're working and you're sending money back home to you know, Eastern Europe or someplace like that, A, you get to work on your English. B, it's pretty good money for that sort of situation. So those sort of, and I don't remember which, it's not H-1B. I want to say it's H-2B, but those visas for seasonal employment, people need those workers. And if they don't get them, they're not as efficient. There's a big story about this on NPR, which granted is another radio station, but in Provincetown, a lot of businesses were being hurt because they couldn't bring in the people that they needed to work in the businesses. So the restaurants weren't able to open as early as they wanted to.
I think we can say we're not against immigrants.
Right.
I think we agree that the law, there's issues with the laws, either we're not enforcing them or we should be changing them or whatever. But I, you know, to get back to the shutdown, that seemed a weird place for them. Not a weird place, but they backed off pretty quickly from,
right.
Like,
well, I think they knew they were in trouble almost immediately. But the one interesting thing about it is that, you know,
And do you really think we're going to get to another one?
I think we probably will, because, you know, it ties into sort of, you know, the whole the president's Make America Great, America First. And, you know, the president was in Davos.
But not alone? Is that what he said?
Yeah. So he was in Davos, Switzerland. So I am not a conspiratorial person. I don't generally believe in the crazy conspiracies. But when you tell me all the world leaders are gathering in Davos, Switzerland to decide the economic future, guys, come on. Be a little less sinister about it. Something, you know, meet in Peoria or something like that. Don't meet in this home for the multi-billionaire crowd. Yeah, so Trump, while he was there, I mean, he said two things that were, I don't want to say alarming. One of them was, he said, according to sort of the speech, America's open for business. Now is a great time to hire people, to invest in the United States, to work in the United States. He said, but remember that we're always going to be America first. Just like every other country should be, you know, England should be England first. France should be France first. when two countries trade, they should trade because both countries are benefiting from it. And that's good. I completely agree with that idea. There's nothing wrong about that.
No, and I think that's sort of, to some extent, even politics sort of forgets that. It's the idea that, like, we can't do a give and take anymore. And I think this is one of the major issues. It's like, I have to win. If I don't win everything, then I lost. Or a group of my constituents, the loudest groups of my constituents, will yell at me and pick at me and hashtag me to death. And I don't think that's good for, you know, you may not be able to get everything now, but, you know, and then right. that's, and I'm not just, I mean, that's just about everything. You can't, whether it's about immigration or whether it's about how you think trade is supposed to go or the plastic bag stuff, like you can find other ways, but that only comes when we have conversations and we commit not only that someone else is right or has a point, but that you might be wrong.
Right.
And those are things we...
And people take it so personally, the idea that, like, people don't want to admit they're wrong because they have so much ego invested in their political philosophy. And for us to change things, we have to get people to think about, not even to admit that they're wrong, but just to say that what's right for
it
them
may not be right.
might not be right for everybody else.
Yeah.
And that's, it should be pretty straightforward. I mean, it used to be, my childhood in the 70s, there was this album called Free to Be You and Me, Marlo Thomas, and talked about everybody, you know, sort of.
My parents had that on.
Yeah, the hippy-dippy stuff. But it was all about, you know, do whatever you want, you know, be mindful of who you are, what pleases you, and pursue those things. Try to be happy. And that makes a lot of sense, right? Try to be happy. Use your liberty, right? Life, liberty.
I don't think that happens. Song made the album.
maybe not, but there's certainly other songs, Life, yeah. Liberty, the Pursuit of Happiness. So the one thing that really alarmed me, though, is that Trump and Mnuchin in Davos, again, you know, it's alarming that they're in Davos, but they said that they wanted to weaken the dollar because it's better for foreign trade. That's kind of alarming, but go ahead.
Trump say he wanted to weaken the dollar?
Yeah, Trump and Mnuchin both said that they wanted to make the dollar weak because it's better for foreign trade. And that's kind of a sketchy thing. I mean, I understand what they're saying, but honestly, for Americans, when the dollar is strong, they have more money. So, I don't know. I go one way or the both. I applaud what the president said in terms of the idea that, you know, we should be trading in a manner that benefits the United States all the time.
Yeah.
We're not a charitable organization, and we should be trading with other countries. But it's a little disconcerting to hear that on one side and then talk about currency manipulation on the other side.
Who is he, George Soros?
Exactly right. Well, that's the thing, because currency manipulation is, you know, if you believe, we've talked about this before, and if you believe that Dick Cheney is a evil mastermind, then we committed economic warfare by devaluing our currency and borrowing millions and billions of dollars from China. The best thing that we can always do, currency, money, value, all of those things are intrinsic. The government shouldn't be manipulating them. And we'll be back next week.
Guys, we'll be back for at least the next 6 to 8 weeks. So listen up, get your friends to watch, and listen.
If you want to support the show, go to www.patreon.com/libertyontheair. Thanks to everybody listening today, and I'm sorry for those of you on the live stream that we didn't get any sound. We'll figure it out next week.
Good night, Skippy. Thanks for the novena.